Hello, ghouls and spools. Welcome to week two of Quarantine Edition. I'm your spoopy ghost of a host, Zachary Scott Ferguson.
I don't know why this is a horror movie from the 50s.
Who are you? Who are you, sir?
I'm a pissed off radio show host who is annoyed that we have to do this again because Zach messed up the audio from the night before. So
the origin story there is we were doing a great pot. This is the second time we're doing this, and so I had my mic all hooked up, but I guess I had it hooked up wrong because I was too busy. I was a little distracted beforehand. I was trying to see how many zeros I should give to the local orphanage.
Zeros of dollars. He was giving $0.
Well, I messed up there too because I forgot to write the one. So it was just a bunch of zeros. But you know what, folks? Sam really laid into me. He used a lot of expletives, you know. So I feel like I got what I deserved. So excuse me.
So anyways, we're going to do the whole entire episode again.
Yeah.
Hey,
you know what?
I don't know what new is different from last night.
Excuse me for being my character, okay?
All right, you know what you can do to...
What?
To go over the news. What's going on in the news?
Okay, you know what? You be...
Well, first off, let's do timestamp.
All right, timestamp again. Now it is Saturday, March 28th at 11:36 a.m. Nothing really has changed in the news. A lot of people are still getting sick. Film people are still doing their stuff from their houses.
That is something that we talked about yesterday that I think is the coolest thing that is coming out of this media is all these late night talk show hosts who have to now work from home, which is, you know, doing late night talk shows. So a lot of them are doing, I think one of the things this whole disease
is it a disease or is it a virus?
This virus is causing is exposing in a lot of different ways. Kind of the stupidity of a lot of old ways of doing things.
Like what?
And, well, for instance, this talk show. Because, as things are becoming more and more digital, I just think late-night talk show hosts are just so outdated. Like, I think the last late-night talk show host that really, was... that people really connected to was David Letterman. Like, after David Letterman, and I'm saying, I think after the 80s, I really don't think that, talk show hosts started becoming more of, variety show. And David Letterman was, this between thing, where he was, late-night talk show, but also he was it was turning into a variety show. And then starting around the 90s, with MTV and things like that. I think it's really interesting.
What are you talking about? MTV? Well, the thing is so now people can do talk show hosts from their computers. I mean, you have those
from their
kids,
podcasts. Their podcasts. Conan does it now.
Well, I mean, the person
Conan has his own thing.
The person it's funny about Conan doing his own podcast because it on Earwolf, you have all these fantastic podcasts that have been doing it for years, and now it's all that has gone away now that Conan's on there.
Yeah. Well, what do you mean all that has gone away?
Well, I mean, it's people are have you heard of Earwolf? That's the show, that's the network Conan's podcast is on. And he's only been doing it for a year. Well, say Comedy Bang Bang and Jim Pardo has been doing it for 10 to 15 years.
Comedy
years.
Bang Bang was... the original, that was...
Well, apparently,
Scott Ackerman, he's the founder, right?
He is one of the executive producers, yes. But
I thought he was like the founder. Like he was the one that came up with the idea of Earwolf.
I think so. He is the one at the very end who goes, Earwolf.
I didn't even know that was the thing.
But I mean, Mark Maron's podcast is hosted on Earwolf, I think. Or is it on Stitcher?
Stitcher is it's a streaming that's a platform.
That's just not a platform. Okay, I don't know if it's on Earwolf. I just assume everything that's on Stitcher is from Earwolf. But no. So the person I always enjoy, the guy I always go to for my late night stuff is Seth
Rogen.
Myers. Seth Myers. I like his Closer Look section. I feel like that's a pretty nice. I don't really care for interviews. I feel like they're always
very fake.
They're so fake. And the guy who like made that apparent is Jimmy Fallon, where he's like
like plugging something at the end.
Yeah. So like I like fake interviews. Like that's why the only kind of interviews I really like are the Comedy Bang Bang-esque or Eric Andre, where it's not really an interview. It's more like, all right, you're here. Like your essence is here. I don't really care what you have to say.
It's interesting because I agree. Jimmy Fallon is my least favorite of all the late night show talk shows. The late night talk show host. Well, like Jimmy Fallon is the one that's most interesting because he includes his kids. And whenever he does these interviews, it's less of like trying to imitate how it was back in the day when they had like a live show. And it's more so like checking in, like a FaceTime, like with, you know, so-and-so, like, hey, how's it going? Check it in. And like the family is in the background and like the family jumps on their laps and he's like, oh, Jimmy.
And my favorite part of Jimmy Fallon's thing with his kids is when his kids come in and he's like, don't make me have to take off my belt again. And Zach said this joke yesterday. And he stands up and he's like, I warned you. And he takes off his belt and his pants come down and his wife, you know, adds in the whoop. And then, of course, whoop, because he sees his beautiful wife and he's like, I'm just kidding. I won't beat you, children. I'm too... Oh, no, never mind.
You know Jimmy Fallon is a major alcoholic.
What?
But who isn't?
Wait, why did you just say that? Why are you... I mean, okay, is he an alcoholic who... Is he one of those alcoholics who are like, hi, I'm an alcoholic, I haven't had a drink in 3 years?
I just feel like, you know... It's also interesting seeing these home lives and like how much of it is, but it's kind of hard to not make, I don't know.
Are we seeing that he's an alcoholic now because we get to see his home life?
No. I mean, it's an open secret that Jimmy Fallon is an alcoholic, is a big alcoholic. But I'm also curious.
Where did you get that fact? Don't just say people
I've
are
just,
an alcoholic.
I know it's talked. I've heard about it on several sources. Like, just once again, I bring this up because I don't want to sound like I am a Joe Rogan fan, because I'm not a meathead who only listens to Joe Rogan, but he did have a writer from the Joe Rogan show. He did have one of Jimmy Fallon's writers who confirmed that he's like a big alcoholic and like is constantly drinking off screen.
Wow. Well, maybe that's why he's laughing all the time.
Yeah, I don't know, but he's out here in East Hampton.
Oh, you should go
visit
him. In fact,
most of those things are. But he is a good. I really like his platform because he's kind of adapted it. It's just weird when people make a joke and they're pause because it's like they're so used to pausing for a laugh track, and there's nothing.
Jokes are so you can really see the scriptness of it now, like with Seth Myers, where like you can see that he's reading, or like you can't tell that he's reading from a thing, but you can see that he's acting. And I can almost without the laugh track, or not the laugh track, but the live audience, I don't see a Seth Myers. I see the person who wrote that joke. Like, I can see, like, some intern who wrote this joke and be like, yeah, that was me.
Maybe the theme for today should be late night shows.
Okay. I think we
Unless you have another... What did we even talk about what the theme is?
Yeah, I thought we were just going to do timelessness again.
All right, we can do that. But next week, let's do late night.
All right.
Because I think it's a very interesting topic that I am interested in.
Well, yeah. We'll do late night for quarantine week 3. Oh, you know what? Saturday Night Live is late night, so I'll do my Jim Pardo, where he's like, and welcome to Two Thumbs Undecided with your hosts, Sam Ferguson and Zach Ferguson.
I don't get the reference. Who's Jim Pardo?
Jim Pardo is the guy who would do like, it's Saturday Night Live with your hosts.
He would say it like that?
Yeah. It
sounds like you're a creepy horror person again.
Oh, well, if you have the jazz behind my voice, like imagine, that's
my kind of jazz.
No, that's Saturday Night Live jazz.
Thoughts on the fact that jazz is dead?
Well, it always gets brought back in some movie like La La Land. Remember,
When the white guy saves jazz?
Yeah, he's like this is a beautiful music, and it's dying. I saw a meme where it showed Emma Stone, and she's like, you're the one who made me like jazz. And then underneath it said, no girl in the history of ever has ever said that.
In the history of ever. Yeah, I think I saw you retweet that.
Oh, did I? My retweets on Two Thumbs Undecided are fantastic.
They are. They're pretty good.
I don't do a lot of original tweets, but
so
I'm not paid to do that.
Pardon me. So
it's only 11:47.
Yeah. So I've been drinking mostly with almond milk in my coffee.
Oh.
Does
that make you tired?
Well, it's because almond milk lasts longer. But yeah, anything else happening? Prince Charles had coronavirus. He's fine now.
Oh, really?
Boris Johnson now has it.
Yeah. Hey, I have coronavirus. Hey, Corona. Now, you know what he said? He's like, hey, Corona, how about you exit from my body? Because Brexit guy.
Yeah, I get it.
Yeah.
I wish he makes that joke. The theme, the topic.
Oh, I have one more news. I have one more news for everybody.
Okay.
I am so excited because Community is coming back to Netflix on April 1st.
Oh, okay.
On Netflix.
So it's not new episodes.
No, not new episodes, but it is the entire series. And I don't know. I just started... You know, there's always these guilty pleasures in comedy or like on Netflix, and the one
there's so many guilty pleasures.
Yeah, like the one I just watched yesterday was The Office. So that's the stereotypical one. But I love Community, but I always was plagued with the commercials from Hulu. I hate the commercials, but they force you to watch them. So I'm going to binge watch Community once it comes out on April 1st, which I believe is a Tuesday or is it a Monday? Unfortunately, March is like the longest month ever. And then on top of this whole coronavirus, these last 2 weeks have felt like 15 years.
Yeah, it has felt long, hasn't it?
It feels extremely long. And you know what's going to be crazy? Is once this is all over, it's going to be like, oh, that was easy. Like, that's over with. Like, it won't feel like a million years ago. It will feel like, at least to me, it will be like, I left the office. I was told not to come to the office. 2-3 months later, I'm back at the office.
Well, now April is going to feel like so long. April is going to be like, man, still April. Think about, people are talking about him now about March, but at least for March, it was like, you know, it was like half of March was,
well,
was
actually,
like things ramping up.
I was just thinking about this. At least with April, we're going into it with this. So like now we can be like, all right, April 1st, let's count it down. March, it was like, oh, it's nice and normal, la 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 la. Now we're living in, like, April is now completely iCoronaville. March was like the creeping monster of like, hey, everything's normal, everything's great. Oh, now I can't handshake you. Oh, now I can't even fist bump you.
I can't handshake you. April is still, they're still going to start making memes about April, let me tell you. The memes about April are going to be insane. There's going to be a lot of memes about April. It's very easy to see how this is going to affect media. First off, there's going to be a lot of movies that come out about viruses.
I was just thinking about that today. So
in like a year.
I probably mentioned this every so often on this podcast, but I've been writing a movie that dealt with the medical world. And the movie, I've been writing it for 4 years, and it never seemed to click. Like, the essence of it just never clicked. I've been writing it a lot, and I've added in an outbreak to it, like a virus to it. And for some reason, now, the movie actually makes sense. So, unfortunately, I know that my movie is going to be one of 1,000 other aspiring writers who are going to be making an outbreak movie.
But you have a leg up on them.
Well, I do, because mine involves furries.
Yeah.
So
it's just, it's always interesting to me, because I think disaster movies are always, can really tell, like, the fears of a society at that time.
Yes.
You know?
Like
after 9/11, there was a lot of, like, Cloverfield. There was a lot of, like, kind of monster, like, things destroying. And also some disease, like there was also some disease things that came out around that time as well.
But nothing like this. Like this will be this. Here's the thing: we've never seen any films revolve so truly around disease. So, like I'm saying, we could only ponder, like out with those movies that people are mentioning now, like Outbreak or Contagion. They could only ponder and speculate what it would be like. And I think a lot of people have said, oh, this is pretty good. Now we're living through it. So now we can be like, I was there. I knew it. I couldn't handshake or fist bump or, I mean, think about this. Sports, sumo wrestlers can't work at all now.
Yeah, that's what I've been thinking about this whole time, is the sumo wrestlers.
Like, talk about,
they're fucked.
I mean, at least with pole. I mean, pole, you could not touch it. You don't need a, I mean, there's a whole table between you and the other person. Sumo wrestlers, it's like, you can't touch each other at all. How do you virtually, you can't have a sumo wrestler fantasy league. Well, I guess
that's a really good point. Like, we should start a charity for the sumo wrestlers.
Yeah, so they can stay their chubby selves.
Yeah.
Because if they're indoors.
Because how else they can buy all that food, you know?
Mm-hmm. The over.
It's very expensive being a sumo wrestler, especially in America, because there's no union in America. There's a union in Japan or wherever it's centered.
Not
in America.
There's a horrible movie idea: an American who wants to be a sumo wrestler,
but can't join the union.
No, like everybody puts him down because he's too skinny or. This seems like a Johnny Knoxville.
I would only watch that if it's Michael Cera wants to be a sumo wrestler.
That'd be so.
And Danny DeVito is his trainer. Yeah. All right. So that's our idea, Hollywood. As you're trying to figure this out, and it's also during a quarantine. Like it's during
just to throw that in there. Just because, like, hey, outbreak movies are all the rage. Let's just throw in an outbreak.
And it's directed by David Fincher.
Son's lawyer.
And they decided to, it's like one of, you know how David Fincher did that webinar with,
yes,
like, the students? He, like, makes this movie as, like, a training movie. and how to make a movie, and he has like just Michael Cera and Danny DeVito over as his, at his house.
I wonder if like directors like a David Finch, who are like at the top of their game as a filmmaker, I wonder if they ever have like fun conversation where like it, imagine a conversation with David Fincher and you know all the like all the top directors, and they just have fun like, hey, what if there was a movie about about a janitor who once, I'm trying to think of a goofy topic, but a lot of these movies have been made. But
you were you about to say, I wonder if there's a janitor that gets doused in toxic waste and becomes Avenger or something?
I can't even think about that movie. No, I was saying, like, what if there's a janitor and he was really smart and he solved an equation and then he, but he's also has a dumb friend. So
I think that's the whole story. So the theme. Oh wait, it's
I think our I think our Michael Cera movie is connecting a good idea.
Connecting.
Personally.
Alright, it's connected again.
I think
all right.
I think like Adam Sandler, Zachy. I think Michael Cera is kind of a
Zachy.
Oh, you can throw him in.
Pulse failed.
Oh, damn it. No, I think Michael. Right. I think Michael Cera is kind of like an Adam Sandler, where all you have to do is just go like, Michael Cera is a pit bull instructor who also falls in love with a bionicle collector.
What?
I'm just saying,
you just throw you know Michael... there's a band called Michael Cera?
I don't know.
They're not bad.
Oh, really?
Not bad. So, much like... So, I think Michael Cera is the kind of person who has somehow managed to be... I think he was really big. Like, he started becoming huge in, like, the... mid-2000s, like with Juno.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Superbad. Him and his character really in some ways could be considered timeless. So because he really embodied, like, the movie Juno, I think, is an example of this time in movies where a lot of these low budget characters, I'm not transitioning. Well, I am trying to get to this. It's a time where, like, these low budget buddy, like, kind of like indie films of, but they were still like, these made a lot of money, like Juno. What's another instance of Mirror and the Dying Girl, I guess. What's like another film? You know what I'm talking about. Like these films that came out in like the mid 2000s of like.
Oh, okay.
That's 50s.
I answered it before you said the 2000s. Also, me, June, and the Dying Girl, that was early or mid 2010s.
Well, I guess that was kind of like a. Like. It was towards
really
the end of it.
I mean, there were probably some really stupid mid 2000 movies that had like coming of age stuff that was cool back in the day.
Fish Tank.
I think that was only seen by like the arty field.
That's true.
Also, that
although
was...
no, my girlfriend was the one that showed me to that film, and I mean, I wouldn't really call her artsy. So I think it's a mix. I think more people watched it than you think. But anyways, I think Michael Cera's character is timeless. And part of the theme that his menage a trois, or not as
he's been timeless what for is 20, it? 20 years or like 50
what is it
years.
Called?
Menage a trois?
His menage, not menage a trois, like his zesse, like there's a French word.
His,
is like his
is Jou Le Jou, or like his booby voo.
Yeah, whatever you're saying. I like his spunk. I like the cut of his jib.
Do you think but Michael like Cera is a timeless? I mean, like people could say that Al Jolson, but
no, I don't think he's timeless. I think he's a character actor. He's himself.
Because unfortunately,
He really wasn't that timeless of a person. I think he's just a he is himself. I think he's. He is one in a million.
Why is this?
Although I watched a really funny interview with him where he's like talking about like when he was a kid, and he did like a lot of acting when he was a kid as well, and during like an audition, there was this kid who like there was this kid that like someone was just like, there was this kid who was like not really following the rules for like an acting thing or for like an act for an audition, and the guy was just like. The guy said something about how, like, you know, you don't have to be here if you don't want to, kind of like being like, hey, like, you know, I'm going to kick you out. And then he was just like, well, I don't want to be here. And he was just like, well, what do you want to do? And he was just like, I want to go play soccer with my friends. And he was just like, okay, well, you can go. If you don't want to be here, we're not going to force you to be here. And he left. And Michael Cera was just like, that guy just ruined his life. He like threw away all of his chances to go play soccer with his friend. What an idiot. And then he was just like, now I kind of realize he probably made a very healthy decision. Like, if he didn't want to be an actor, it's probably good on him.
Yeah, no, that's very true. I mean, Michael Cera probably was pushed into acting. Well, he probably liked it as a kid. And then his parents were probably one of the parents who were like, let's send him to every single audition because this is maybe our ticket in.
All right. Well, so the topic for today is not about Michael Cera. It's about just timelessness. And what I was trying to get at yesterday, and I think I didn't really word it well until today, is it's not necessarily about timelessness, but the ability to be timeless by defining your generation. Like someone who is like Jack Kerouac is a writer who defines the 50s.
So, okay, our topic for today is not about timelessness, which I do have good topics. We're talking about defining generations.
That's what I was saying yesterday, is it's about people who are able to write and capture, or even directors who are able to just capture the time period they live in so perfectly. Because this all started with my mentality of for some reason I was on this little kick of watching Hunter S. Thompson. People talk about Hunter S. Thompson and how he really defined the 70s and like the 70s mentality of like the 60s, how everything was just like, we can do everything with peace and love. And how in the 70s that all kind of crashed and burned. Like everything was like Vietnam. You were realizing like there was just more and more chaos going on.
Yeah, he didn't even and go his, to Vietnam.
He didn't go to Vietnam, but like his writing of how it became like we are the ones who are like like it's just like we are now like the disgusting, you know, the American dream is like now not only dead, but it's like on fire.
Yeah, and
it's
he was very much a person who believes in just the opposite of joy. Like seemed like he was very spiteful pessimist. And didn't see, I mean, like, basically he seems like even if you were a colleague of his, he would be someone who would be an asshole. Like if you said something, he would try to like shoot it down.
Yeah.
Which you can definitely hear in his commentary for Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. He called Tobey Maguire a weird, like, troll person.
Yeah, he really didn't like Tobey Maguire.
No.
But, so, his type of writing, I feel like, embodies, in a way, a part of the 70s.
Well, I think his type of writing was more interesting because grabbed the nation because it didn't feel like a script. I think because you talk differently than you write, okay? Like, in movies, people talk very, like, hello, Jim, how's it going today? Getting eggs? But in real life, you kind of, everything kind of flows
that's
out.
That's how, I just want to say that's how most of Zach's, anything he ever writes, he always begins with someone asking about where they're going and then realizing already that you're probably going to get eggs.
Yeah, no.
Answering their own question.
I do that because I'm making fun of the nature of how writing is. So it's like, Jim, back from the astronaut meeting. Did you get eggs? Yeah, it's funny because it's so freaking true. Dude.
So what was your point? Continue. When you're writing.
My point is I haven't read any of this stuff, but from what I've, listened and words, if I translated them down onto paper, would have become sentence. His stream of consciousness seems very much different than what, say, the 60s and the rad dads of the 50s.
Well, I would say, like, in the 50s, one of the things I said yesterday is, and what also made me think about this even more, is one of his early journalist writings in, like, the early 60s was he went to go visit Ernest Hemingway. And Ernest Hemingway was a voice of what men should be like in, say, the 40s and 50s. But by the 60s, his definition of culture, it was not what it was anymore. So he ended up killing himself. And then Hunter S. Thompson ended up killing himself.
Both due to, like, super brain messing up. The thing is,
probably due to the severe alcoholism and also
Hunter S. Thompson, drugs. The reason why he eventually did himself in is he very much self-medicated himself to the point of his brain going crazy. And I feel like, I wonder if people, like, it didn't seem like he killed himself due to, like, depression. It seemed like it was more like, I'm done. Oh, no, that's my Robin Williams. Oh, that's sad, too.
That's not really Robin Williams. Well... But anyways, both of these people, I would characterize as people who were able to define some kind of characteristic of that decade.
And now,
very much. But go ahead.
You're saying that Ronan Farrow is the author of our time. I would disagree because, I mean, here's the thing. Yes, he's writing some fantastic articles.
That's what I said. I just want to give some context. That's what I said yesterday. And I do still say that today to a degree. I wouldn't say that he is necessarily capturing an essence of the time. Although, I mean, he is. He is an investigative journalist in things that are very, very important nowadays. Like, he was kind of on the precipice of the Me Too movement.
Yeah, but I would put him in the same category as, say, Morrow or those, like, famous journalists.
He's a great journalist.
He doesn't create, he just transcribes fantastically. Yeah. People like Hunter S. Thompson and Ernest Hemingway, they created a world based off real life. So I doubt Roman Farrow would make a story based off the Me Too. I think people would definitely see that as him cashing in.
Well, I would say today, maybe something that is like something... I mean, it's hard to say, like, for the day of... Or like someone who's defining the generation of what's now, because
there's so many voices.
You know, now is still going on,
and there's also, I mean, I hate to say it, but at the moment, if I had to say off the top of my head a voice of a generation, like somebody who seems very, and I don't agree with this, I'm just thinking it, but like somebody like I hate to say this so much, but PewDiePie.
Here's
the thing, like
that's stupid. I don't agree with that at all.
I wouldn't even think anyone would say
he's... I'm not talking about influence. Like, if I'm talking about just influencers, Kylie Jenner.
He's the top of, like, okay, we're in the digital age, right? A digital age where we repurpose and repackage and basically steal from other ideas from the past. That's basically all of PewDiePie's thing. He only got famous because he was playing somebody else's hard-earned work and making it... I mean, I think his stuff is horrible, but he's a multi-million dollar guy who apparently has millions of viewers. Including, I guess, the South Park people.
But I think you're still missing with what I'm saying. I'm not talking about someone who is just an influencer
no,
of
and
today.
He's the, it's the essence
I'm talking
of
about
a
someone
generation.
That is right.
An essence of a generation.
No, he is not the essence of the generation. But he is not creating something He is not. Let me finish. Let me finish. He is creating something, but he is not creating something that is. That is supposed to be is supposed to be a mirror of what's happening in today's world. Like he is just being himself. Like he is a byproduct of today's world. And you could also say the same thing with what's his face? The one guy with like purple hair that does all the something dragon or like I forget. There's like some other gamer now that's like gotten really big. What?
Oh,
no,
there's
another
T
guy
series?
On Twitch.
T-Series?
No, there's a guy on Twitch
but,
who's gotten also just as big
you
as
just said
PewDiePie.
That, you just said that like PewDiePie is an essence or a byproduct of the generation. Oh, that's what God. I'm saying. He is a very... and but I don't like it, but in society, I would say... I'm trying to think of somebody who's made...
I think, but still,
like,
this is not what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about someone who is the byproduct of their generation.
Ernest
like,
Hemingway
people
was...
who define the... No, first off, I don't like Ernest Hemingway. I want to get that clear. I'm not a fan of Ernest Hemingway. I'm not a fan of what he... But it is hard to...
Right.
It's hard to argue that Ernest Hemingway was not... He did not... He was not able to capture the mentality of... what was going on in the world and like put it into words and create a story from it. PewDiePie and most like YouTubers like that, they're not capturing anything. They're not trying to put it into words. What they are doing is just being popular. Like there's a lot of like Frank Sinatra, I would not say is.
Well, he's an icon.
He's an icon.
And you can't say.
Okay. Frank Sinatra is not a good example. He's not a good example. I would say...
I think you're starting to realize I may be right.
No. You're not.
I am.
No.
But I will say I'm not right about saying that he is the he is the true epitome of our generation. I think he is a strong... Someone who would
right,
be...
Maybe you're right. I don't know.
I think if you look back to our creators in the, like, the truly popularness of, say, 2010 to 2000 now... he would be a huge part of it. He made video game and Retsu play. Retsu play is the making fun, and that's actually racist.
Well, I don't know much about this stuff.
It's the let plays or whatever. The it's a huge culture out there. The watching the video, the let plays.
Yeah.
It's
okay.
A culture
fine.
I do.
I
want to
move
like,
off of PewDiePie. I want to move off of PewDiePie. But I see what you mean, and I will say to a degree, yes. But I'm also thinking more so of writers, and musicians to a degree. I think musicians to a degree, because musicians are putting things into words still. And I think, in a way, musicians are, today, I think there aren't that, the main thing is there's really not that many writers today who are, like, well known for their books or like writers who are journalists or just like people who make articles or like there's not that many people who are well known for that. Normally writers are comedians, they're you know, they make movies, they you know, they put it into some kind of visual medium for the most part. They're writing. But people just don't have the time to read anymore. Or it's just journalists who are just very objective or not even objective, but very on-the-nose journalism. There's none of this kind of, like, broad journalism. So it's different. It's different today.
You said broad, and I was thinking of, like... Well, I mean, I guess a lot of comedians out there could represent our times. Like the women from Broad City are a staple of... I've never seen the show... But
yeah.
They kind of are a staple of our pulp culture.
Mm-hmm.
Which unfortunately,
yeah, you could say that.
Unfortunately, it seems like our funniest, like the embodiment of all of our funniest people are, like kind of lazy, smoky.
Yeah. Have you seen Awkwafina? The Awkwafina's new show?
I haven't.
That it's kind of exactly like Broad City, where it's like this, you know, this stoner who's like trying to get their life together, just gets into all these crazy situations along the way.
Yeah, and you had that with Workaholics too. You know, it's like, I mean, it's funny.
Workaholics. It was lazy. I actually don't know much about Broad City either, but Workaholics, like, they weren't trying to be anything. They were just. Where they wanted to be.
Well, they smoked a lot of weed, and they got into adventures because they meet a lot of weirdo people.
Was there something... You didn't see Broad City, though, right? You said
I haven't,
that, right?
But I do... I have... Okay. Through osmosis, I've listened to a lot of... Or I've seen a lot of Abby Johnston's... She's kind of becoming a more of a voice actress now.
Interesting.
I like her voice.
All right. Well, we have, we have 15 minutes left. I don't know if we've gotten any closer to figuring this out.
If we're talking about generations, I would just. Today's people are so spread out that I don't think there's any defining voice. I think there's one-ness of voice, which is, trying to be creative, but while being lazy and having as much fun as possible. And I think people like PewDiePie show that, because literally his entire money comes from him sitting in a chair making comments about other people's work. And then you have also It's Always Sunny, which has the same kind of essence as Workaholics, except not as much drugs. So maybe now that we're in this era of an outbreak and things are crumbling, maybe we'll see more influences of people being innovative. Like people not just being like, oh, that's so funny, drugs, alcohol, sex. It's like, aha, how can we, like, oh, these people are being, they're scientists and they're working towards a common problem, but they're bumbling through it. I think that's very much more British humor. American humor seems to be in that vein of like drugs, they're funny.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm gonna swear.
I mean, humor is different. I think humor, I would say though that, yeah, I think humor does have the ability to, like, because I think a voice who is timeless is both able to capture their time period and also be timeless, is like Mark Twain, who is a famous humorist from like the 1800s. And Mark Twain was like,
he made racism,
I mean, he is
funny,
I get, well, I think, well, I don't know, I'm not a scholar, but
he was a parodyist, or like a parody
yeah he guy. Did a lot of parodies, and I do think you're right, like a lot of comedians or just humorists or just in time, like the people who did comedy, I think that if that can stand the test of time, you know, that's,
well, parody,
because I think comedy, if it's just always feels modern, if it's good, it's always funny, like what you said.
And parodiness is also, I think, a staple of, like, can really make you into the zeitgeist of standing the test of time. I mean, heck, Charlie Chaplin is super well known, I mean, for his goofy shenanigans, but he parodied Hitler.
And that's what I was saying.
And that was fantastic. I mean, just like parodying what we know is wrong, I think is a, if you can do it right, is a recipe for success. I mean, that's what Stephen...
Maybe that's it.
Parodying? I think that's a true... Like, maybe Stephen Colbert was like the greatest guy ever for doing his parody of a super right-wing Republican. Which, by the way, here's the thing. There's so many, like, examples of, like, that making fun of the Republican side. I have never seen a comedian, like, a Southern comedian try to parody a Democrat. Like, that would be interesting to me. It just, I think this.
There's not that many right wing comedians.
Well, no, that's not true. I just like. I
mean, well, they're just not. They're just not funny.
Or they get way too hurtful, way too quick.
Yeah, they get way too angry.
Yeah.
About things. All right, so let's get into the I think I'm glad that we came to some kind of thought, like some sort of conclusion.
Yeah.
All right, so let's go over our movie suggestions. I mean, we already talked about it yesterday.
All right, let's I know it's too late, but we shouldn't have kept saying about yesterday. It's breaking the illusion.
Well, I mean, you broke it.
How did
by
I
not doing good audio?
Well, so. We didn't have to bring that in. We didn't have to show that I made a mistake.
I wanted to.
People are going
because I want people to know.
Yeah, but because of that, you may have ruined this episode.
No, I didn't ruin it.
How do you know? We don't have any. We have no comments, Sam. We have our own comments.
And I think being raw is what makes us true.
Well, and that is why me making a mistake is so true to form. Okay, so you're welcome.
All right, so let's go over some of the things.
Our movies. The movie that I would say you should go and watch on this sunny day but can't touch a pooping thing is a movie that I love called The Sting, starring a I don't know, 30-ish Robert Redford, a middle-aged Paul Newman pre him doing The Ranch, and Robert Shaw as the villain. It's a fantastic movie about a con that maybe not a con to get revenge on a bad guy who killed Robert Redford's mentor. Now Paul Newman has to come in and be his slight mentor, while also maybe learning a thing or two from Robert Redford. It's directed by the same guy who did All the President's Men and Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. I believe it's George Roe Hill. Yes, I'm confident in that. It did win, I don't know if it won Oscars, but the thing that is the most famous from it is kind of the popularization of the movie or the music, The Entertainer, which goes do 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 do. So that's my one movie.
All right, my movie is let me pull it up. My movie is The Silent. I have a few silent movies on here because I feel like I think more people need to watch silent movies.
Hell yeah.
It's the silent version of Phantom of the Opera, which is great for quarantine because it's about a guy who literally could not leave
the cellars of this opera.
And what's cool about this is it's. I mean, Zach and I, we did a huge binge of every single Phantom of the Opera movie, because I think most people only know it for the musical. But this is based off of the book. And I think the two that you really only need to watch is, like, the musical version and this version. Because this version, it's about a guy who is quite literally, you see him deformed. It's not like he's wearing that famous mask where it's, like, half of his face is, like, masked. You see his face, and his face is like what's so scary. So it's a different take on an old story, and it's interesting. It's scary. It gets you on the edge of your seat. Funny, the trailer for that, like, it was one of the first times that they trailers for that movie, you are not allowed to see. They made a point you weren't allowed to show the face because they wanted the face to be a surprise in the movie.
I have a question, Sam. Is that guy truly that hideous to look at?
What, in Phantom of the Opera?
Yeah, like, is he really that deformed? I mean, I'm just saying, he's a little messed up, but I have seen a lot of freaky people. Alright?
He looks pretty messed up.
Yeah, but if I saw him walking around, I mean, his nose is a little scrunched up. You know, maybe if he learned some French.
No.
Well, actually, he already knew French. I'm saying if he learned, like, another language, you know, something to make him even more... I mean, the guy, the whole movie Mask, remember that, the movie with Cher about the disfigured kid who has, like, a super messed up face? Have you never heard of this?
Yeah.
It's got,
I know of that, yes.
Yeah, he's got a so, like, super messed up face, and he found comedy. He's like, hey, take a picture, it might last longer. The Phantom of the Opera guy, he's not that ugly, okay? That's all I'm saying.
He looks like his face is made to look like a skull. He is definitely, it's not even deformed, he just looks...
I think he was born...
I don't know. I think you're wrong.
Remember the 2004
He is version? Scary looking.
In 2004, the Joel Shoemaker version?
Well, that one isn't even...
Yeah, the one that I super love. The Phantom of the Opera, the most recent one. With Brett Butler.
Yeah, the musical one, yes.
Yeah, well, yeah. So that one... That guy has zero... He doesn't look ugly at all.
Yeah, his face, not deformed at all.
His face is a just a little bubbly. I'm just saying, you live in New York. There are some weird looking people that with a little bit of makeover and I'm just saying, like, for the Phantom of the Opera, if he got a comb over, maybe a cool tie. I mean, even the Elephant Man, you know, dressed up pretty nice and
had yeah, a nice you're right. The one from 2004 is fine. Like, I don't think I was even surprised when it can't win it. But the original one. Anyways, that's my movie recommendation. What's yours?
Sorry, I went off so much on that. That's just, whew. I love the movie Patton with George C. Scott as the George.
Oh, that's a new one.
Is Patton. Yes. I love that movie. I specifically remember really loving that movie because there was a... like a bright and sunny day where I'm like, I'm going to spend the day in. And I watched Patton. And I loved it from start to finish. I mean, it opens up with that famous shot of him going like, if you step into some goo, that's your friend's goo. He's dead. You got to, you know, fight it on. In his George C. Scott way. And it just throughout is a fantastic, Also, I love these movies that really do encapsulate a moment in time where America was truly unified, and it had that kind of that greatness to it.
Well, it was unified because
we were fighting a common enemy.
White people were in charge, and white people were very much, you know, segregation was still a thing. Like there wasn't that many voices outside of white men. That's why it was so unified.
So that's why the movie was good?
No, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying, like, when you talk about, like, it's kind of like Make America Great Again.
Is that what you're... Why you think people think it's good is because they're all racists? Like, myself?
No, that's not what I'm saying. I am saying that romanticizing the time in the past in, like, the 60s and 70s when, like, everyone... Or not, more so, I guess, the 60s is, I don't know, I think it's, you know, it's that time, I'm not talking about the movie, but that time when everyone loved America. I also don't even think everyone loved America back then. I think it was, like, it was kind of just as bad as it was now, or it was getting to be as bad as it was now.
I don't know, I think there was a pretty deep patriotism for America. You know, people.
I do think that's.
I mean, the horribleness of what happened afterwards, where African Americans still were treated horribly, even though they served in the army.
Anyways, I don't want to get into
what
this.
I'm saying
Patton is,
a
great movie.
It's a great movie because forget about the love for America, but it's about
we're running out of time.
It's about a person who could command an army. And the ups and downs of it, and also the character who believes himself to be a reincarnation of, like, Julius Caesar. That kind of adds a spiritual side to it.
Okay, my movie is, it's a great movie. I agree. My other movie is Grey Gardens, the documentary. Because it's about people who, it's a documentary from the 70s about, what's this, Jackie Kennedy's sister and mother. But they're kind of, or they're related to Jackie Kennedy very closely. But
it's like and, twice removed cousin or something like that.
Yeah, but they're, it's just interesting seeing their two musicians or artists that have kind of fallen from grace, because I think they really they live in East Hampton. They live in East Hampton, and it's kind of them being so like socially isolated, and they don't leave their house, and their house is about to be condemned because their house is so old and disgusting and dilapidated, and it's kind of following them around. So it's a great isolation movie. Also, it's a great time capture of what life was like in the 70s, and also it's kind of this relationship with Jackie. She's not in the documentary, but these two people, and I don't know, it's like a hidden life.
Yeah. And then my real quick suggestion is the documentary series on Hugh Hefner on Amazon. It's called The American Playboy, The Hugh Hefner Story. I found it to be very, very interesting on how Hugh Hefner, like, you always think of Hugh Hefner as, you know, this socialite, you know.
Always.
Characteristic, like, he's a caricature of himself, but he started as just a business guy. Like, how to, like, what's different out there? And he, I mean, you could say what he does is sexist, but the documentary is. The documentary is a very interesting take.
Who did the documentary? Was it a guy?
Probably. Well, actually, it's
okay.
The only thing that I hate,
he is sexist.
Well, the only thing I hated about the documentary is they kept going back to Brett Ratner, who is now a Me Too guy. Like, he was charged with sexual harassment.
Yeah, so I don't know about this, but well, anyways, saying, I guess that,
like,
movie.
Like, look, it's an interesting documentary about
how. Yeah, if you want some sympathy for Hugh Hefner.
Well, it's not sympathy. It's
and my last film is Help, which is the Beatles film that I feel like most people don't know about. It's really weird. It's a lot weirder than I think everyone watches.
I don't
Hard Day's Night. I think it's a very fun, weird film in which Ringo Starr is, they're trying to steal his ring, and it gets caught in an elevator, and it's half of the movie. It's just, it's an insane film that I'm kind of just like, how did this get made? Like, I have no idea how they made this film. No musician would want to make something this weird today. It's just such an odd film, and they go to war randomly with Russia, and it's odd. And it's also around the time that they started making like their true masterpieces. Anyways, that's the episode. Tune in next week.
I probably have better audio.
All right, hopefully.
I will.
Godspeed.
And stay clean, Spider-Man. Bye. It's just like